Blessed be Adonai, God of my master Abraham, who has not abandoned his faithful love for my master, because Adonai has guided me to the house of my master's kinsman. Now, he says he's not abandoned his faithful love for my master. It's really, reads something like, blessed be Adonai, God of my Lord Abraham, who has not relinquished chesed ve'emet from my Lord. The journey to the house to my Lord's brother. And so on. You understand? He's praying. He's talking to God. He just got to the well. He can't believe everything's working out great. He's in this prayer. And in this prayer, he just put this gold ring around Milcah, and he sees this picture coming together. And he's praising God. And he's saying, thanks for not abandoning covenant kindness and truth. And thanks for guiding me on this path to find the heir, the matriarch, the princess of God, the one who's going to be the princess in God's house, the one who's going to give birth to a nation, the one who's going to be the beginning of the line of the heritage to the King of Kings, to Messiah. And it's a Canaanite. And he's praying. And he's the first guy to say, chesed ve'emet.
It sounds like he's had experience with that before in the house of Abraham. It's seeing Abraham pray or seeing the results of Abraham's faith in God. That's what it seems to me from what you're saying.
Well, you can see that. He's obviously learned a few things by being in the house of Abraham, including how to worship Yod-Heh-Vav. Okay? But we never see the word chesed ve'emet until this portion. And we don't see it first until verse 27 when I just gave it to you. Now, the second time we see it is 24, verse 49. Let's hear it.
Now, if you'll do it kindly and truly with my master, tell me, and if not, tell me, that I may turn to the right hand or to the left.
So Eliezer says, show me chesed ve'emet to my master. It's a matriarch line. And it's in the same chapter, and it's used twice. And the first time it comes up in prayer, and it's said to God in prayer. And the second time this happens. Now, the third use is Genesis 47, verse 29.
When the time drew near that Israel must die, he called his son Joseph and said to him, now if I found favor in your sight, please put your hand under my thigh and deal kindly and truly with me. Please do not bury me in Egypt.
So here's Joseph, and he says, let me grab hold of your marbles. And chesed ve'emet, I don't die here. I got to go back to Israel, die in the Holy Land. In the cave, Machpelah. It was Yaakov talking. And he's got Joseph. He says, I'll cut you off. Now show me chesed ve'emet and bury me in the promised land with my fathers. I'm a patriarch. Okay? And he's in Hebron, and we're still fighting over the tomb over there, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's great. He got there. Chesed ve'emet, he got there. Chesed ve'emet, Eliezer got Rivka out of there. Chesed ve'emet, these things are happening. Now, those are the three uses in Genesis. Now we come to Exodus 34, 6 and 7.
And I pressed before him and proclaimed, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, Le-Vav-Heh Adonai is God, merciful and compassionate, slow to anger, rich in grace and truth, showing grace to the thousands of generations, forgiving offenses, crimes, and sins, yet not exonerating the guilty, but causing the negative effects of the parents' offenses to be experienced by their children and grandchildren, and even by the third and fourth generation.
Rich in chesed ve'emet to the thousandth generation. Get it? Now we're talking dynasties. Now we're talking about kingly empire. We're talking about thousand-year lead times here. And it's in Exodus. Get it? Thousandth generation is established by chesed ve'emet, grace and truth. This is an important combination here, this chesed ve'emet. All right. The next one has to do with Rahab. Rahab. When you expect, since Rahab's name is mentioned in Matthew 1, that maybe that matriarch, you know, will have been shown chesed ve'emet, and that maybe this is how she gets into the line. Maybe Matthew sees that, so he grabs her name. Maybe, maybe, don't know. Joshua 2:14, somebody read it.
The man replied to her, "Our lives are certainly worth yours, provided you don't betray our mission. So when Adonai gives us the land, we will treat you kindly and in good faith."
We will treat you with chesed be'emet. Now you see, with all these different translations, kindly grace, kindness and grace, covenant, loyalty, loyalty and grace, kind grace, kindness, everything, gracious kindness, anything else you put in it, you're going to miss this, you see. Meanwhile, it's like Rahab just got into the line this way, chesed be'emet. Rivka got into the line, chesed be'emet. God is building 1,000 generations, chesed be'emet. Yaakov is getting into the land with the patriarchy and the tomb, chesed be'emet. Eliezer's guided, chesed be'emet, and first gives it to God in prayer, because he's floating on grace and truth. As he finds his way, not just to some town, but the town, and not just to some kin, but where he was sent, to Abraham's kin. Meanwhile, he doesn't have a clue where he's walking. He's walking in faith. He's doing reverse lech lecha to go find somebody to bring him back, lech lecha. You get it? Reverse lech lecha. He's leaving the promised land to go get lost somewhere to find somebody so they can come back down. Reverse lech lecha. He finds her and she goes, elech, and then they lech lecha. They go forth, start a household in the promised land, in the footsteps of the guy that did it before him, Abraham and Sarah. And of course, this continues the life of Sarah. All right, let's look at Psalm 61, verse 8. We're talking about heritages here.
May he be enthroned in God's presence forever. Appoint grace and truth to preserve him.
Prolong the life of the king. Years, generations. It starts maybe in verse 7 or something. Prolong the life of the king, right? Mm-hmm. In years, generations. See those words in there?
Mercy and truth.
And then enthroned forever, see it? Appoint chesed ve'emet to preserve this king. This king who's got years, generations, and is enthroned forever. Hmm. This is King David getting the throne. This is the enthronement psalms. This is God building a house, and this is God putting a seat in the house. Chesed ve'emet. Talk about a chair in God's house that the king sits in. All right, how about Psalm 89, verse 15? This is the dynasty of David. We lost somebody that we had.
You know. Make us glad according to the days in which you have afflicted us, the years in which... that's Psalm 90.
Yeah, that's why it didn't work.
Yeah. Blessed are the people who know the joyful sound. They walk, O Lord, in the light of your countenance. That was my 15.
I think it's 14 then, maybe, because that's...
Yeah, 15 is a Hebrew, so 14.
Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Mercy and truth go before your face.
Chesed ve'emet. Mm-hmm. And see, mercy, bad translation, because I'm going to tell you, rachamim, in my opinion, is life from the dead. And chesed is new creation. And I'm going to say there are different sides of saving faith. I said that last week when I was dealing with the idea that Abraham's got to believe for a new creation, but then life from the dead is receiving back some same old guy and continuing his life. And that's Christian belief for salvation, but it's reckoned unto righteousness to Abraham in Genesis 15:6. He's not circumcised. He hasn't even had Hagar for a concubine, and he hasn't had Ishmael, and he knows that God's going to make it from his loins, and he's jumping for joy, and when he believes it, God says, tzedakah, righteous merit, it's reckoned unto you for righteousness, and the guy's going to turn right around, listen to his wife, and have Ishmael. So if he really had the saving faith, wouldn't you think that he would know it's going to be from Sarah's loins? And wouldn't you think that, you know, it's going to be Isaac and so on?
I think if I'm looking deeply into those two words,
yes,
the biggest difference that I see is that rachamim is something that is humanly capable, a human can do. Chesed is something that only God can do. Human cannot feel chesed.
Well, I know where you're coming from on that. When I've looked at it, there's a sector in rachamim where God comes in. I mean, like in Gevurah and other things, where it's like he shows mercy to the dead across right. generations. It's in Gevurah in the second. And the use there in Amidah, I'm gonna say that there's a time when God shows mercy. And he shows mercy when it's too late for us, and he's still going to pull it off. So here we're dealing with the foundation of your throne, righteousness and justice. Then we say, Chesed be'emet attend you. And we're dealing with the idea that God won't withdraw his grace from... look at verse 34 in Psalm 89 as well. Whoever was reading 15.
33?
Yeah, 33 in the English, 34 in the Hebrew.
Nevertheless, my loving kindness I will not utterly take from him, nor allow my faithfulness to fail.
And look at 37 and 38. That's 36, 37 in the English.
His seed shall endure forever, and his throne as the sun before me. It shall be established forever like the moon, even like the faithful witness in the sky.
So talk about the dynasty being established forever. If you go back to 34, 33, won't withdraw... The real word is grace. Won't withdraw my grace. So what's the translation?
Loving kindness.
Yeah, loving kindness.
Okay.
Nevertheless, my loving kindness.
So there. Okay. So sometimes, you know, in the English, we're going to miss all this. But we're pulling it out here for you. Proverbs 20, verse 28. Now, do you hear what's happening here? We're talking about God establishing David's throne forever, and it's through Chesed Be'emet. Okay? That's what's going on right now. We've read three or four of them now. Psalm 20, verse 28.
Me, or is that someone else?
Mercy and truth preserve the king, and by loving kindness he upholds his throne.
Now, mercy is really chesed. Chesed be'emet. He preserves the king. Uh-huh. And then with grace, again, you see, he upholds his throne. And when, you know, when you're going to... If you're going to miss the word, I mean... Then no wonder we get a confusion. Because I think it's very clear what's happening with grace. That grace is God giving us a river of power to do his story. And we're supposed to work hard and rest easy on grace. And it's by grace that we're saved through faith. And it's by grace that we live. And it's by grace that God accomplishes perfection, the things he wants to do in our lives that are part of his story. It's all done by grace. See, it's by faith through grace. And the whole emphasis on faith forgets that it's resting on a river of power. It's grace. That's why believe in is important. Believe in means believe in God. And you've got to only stay connected to grace by staying connected to God. Your faith is no good if you're not connected. And the deeds that you do are no good if you're not connected. Wrong time, and then it's different context. Won't stand the test of truth.
Jeff, where did covenant kindness get watered down in this the translations to like mercy and loving kindness?
Well,
I mean, that's like a lot of different words.
Yeah, and here's the thing that's going on. Here's the thing that's going on. Blessing is power flowing from God. Cursing is really, he's just pulling back power. He's withdrawing. Whether he leaves the camp or whether he leaves the project, So cursing really is an absence of power. And then it's like, okay, you're on your own. Do it yourself. Suddenly you're in reality and it's your kingdom. And, you know, you fight 284 million Arabs now. See how good you're going to do it. Go ahead. You can do it. This gives you an idea. So when you're out there, Chesed Be'emet preserves a king. With grace he upholds his throne. The idea is, Chesed, to me, it's like when you're walking in covenant blessing, you're on God's kind side. And I want you to stay on God's kind side, and I want you to sow and reap kindness. I don't want you to sow and reap righteousness. I want you to sow and reap kindness. I don't want you to live in a world where you blame, justify. I want you to live in a world where you praise, glorify. And the praise, glorify, you have to be like blind to when people are taking advantage of you. Neutral. Like, you're God's property, it's His problem. I'll say it again. You're God's property, it's His problem. When you're God's property, you want to really be His property. To really be His property, as far as I'm concerned, you come to Sinai. Here's a Sinai model for me. You got out of Egypt. You came to Sinai. The unholy guys, it's roped off right here. You can't go up this table. You can't stand up here. It's holy ground. This is the mountain. How do you ascend to be in the mountain? Well, we're in the camp of Israel. Well, we kind of ascended when we got thrown out of Egypt, but only to the base of the mountain. We're a little higher than we were in Egypt. Egypt's along the riverbank, and we're up here in the mountain range. But we're at the base of the mountain. Now, how do we get up here? Oh, well, the priests, they can go up there. They're sanctified a little bit. The elders, they can go up there because they got all these problems with the community, and they have to have a little more sanctification too. But they only go as far as they go, and then it's stopped there. And if the unholy get up there, the wrath of God breaks out against you because it's incompatible. Tame and ritual impurity and God's holiness are dynamite, are nitroglycerin, are epoxy glue.
Antimatter.
Yeah, so you don't want to do that. So what you got to do is you've got to get to a place where you're set apart for God, and then you've got to keep the standard in order to stay there. And what that really means for me is you go from the kingdom of darkness, the transfer, Colossians 1:12, into the kingdom of light. You're transferred, now you're out here at the base of the mountain. And you're no longer under the kingdom of darkness. You're not in Pharaoh. You're not in Pharaoh's house. You're not under Pharaoh's authority. You're out. But when you're here, you're just barely hanging on because you're kind of dwelling in light and you're in and out. And the lights are going on and off, and you know, you got dark thoughts and you got machinations and you got all kinds of things that are troubling you. Remember, you're being raised to dwell in the light. And your sons of the light, you're supposed to walk in the light. You've been transferred to light. And when God builds the kingdom, it's going to be like solid light. It's going to be like you have to dwell in that halogen bulb. You're not ready right now. You go in a halogen bulb right now, you'll burn up. And God is a flaming fire. And you're not, you got too much impurity, you got problems. So you're down here. But you ascend in sanctification. And as you ascend in sanctification, you abide in the light. When you're in sanctified place, you're set apart to holy ground and you're abiding. And as you become more and more God's property and belonging to God and dwelling in His presence, then you begin to ascend the mountain. Moses spent 40 days up there. He didn't have time to eat. And when he came down, he was glowing. That's because he was in the glorified presence of the Lord. And it radiated holiness. It shot him through with it. And he was radiating light. He had to go cover himself when he came back down. Because the guy's glowing for 20, 30 years after a 40-day experience up there. Now, the people that were on the mountain, that's one thing. And the people going further up the mountain, it's another thing, because you're getting closer to that halogen. And you're going to get radiated with holiness when you abide in God's presence. And after a while, you want to get to a place where you're living in the light. And that's what Moses did for a little while. And when Yeshua comes and the radical light breaks in, He wants us to live in the light. So we have to go from dwelling in the light to abiding in the light to living in the light. And we have to ascend in sanctification in order to get made over from image to image, 2 Corinthians 3:18, until we're transformed into the image and glory of the Messiah. And then when He's looking at Himself, He sees us. Get that? When He's looking at Himself, He sees us. Right now, we put Yeshua on. And when He looks at us, He sees Yeshua. But when we're transformed, it's going to reverse. When He's looking at Himself, He'll see us. And we will be in the image and glory of the Messiah. Now, how long will that take? Well, He's got all the time He needs. You got the problem, not Him. He's got all the time He needs. Now, you don't fake God out on these things, right? The guy comes up to God and says, "Man, 1 second with You is like 1,000 years. God says, "Yep." "And a penny with You be like $1 million. I mean, $1 million to me would be a penny to you.
Yep.
So, God, can you spare a penny? Certainly, he said. Certainly. Just a second. Now, you don't... God is not to be mocked, but as a person sows, so shall they reap. And what we want to do is we want to sow kindness. In Paul, when he's writing in Romans, he says in Romans, if a person gives his life, remember he's talking about a person giving his life? And is it for who? So the person won't give his life for a dikaios, won't even give his life for a righteous, for an agathos, for a person that's beneficent and kind, maybe. But maybe not for a righteous. Get that. If you're one of these crotchety guys that's right all the time, even though you're upstanding and righteous, people aren't going to die for you. But if you're good, then maybe they'll die for you. Especially if you're relative. But if not, forget it. And then we're supposed to give our life for Yeshua, right? See the picture here? If we're sowing kindness, we're going to be good. If we're good, that's the kind of person you want to die for. That's what he wants to transform us into. So anytime you're being right, you got to like say to yourself, wait a minute, I'm on the wrong track here again. I'm busy being right. When I sit down and say I'm being right, you know what I say? I'm building my empire. I'm doing the right thing. Because I know my empire is right. I know that. I know. The only problem is my empire isn't God's empire. He knows that. And I'm a little smarter, I know that too. I know I don't know his story. So I know whatever I know, it's not his story. That's what I know. So when I think it's right, it's like, man, I'm not being kind here, and I'm being right, I'm an idiot. I mean, idios. Not an idiot, idios. The Greek idios is a person that's into their own idea. You make a noun out of it, you know where it goes. So, you get a chance to evaluate it before it passes through. And then, it's like, reanalyze it and say, well, what's the kind thing to do right now? And take your empire and take what you think is right and shove it. And figure out what kind is and sow it. Because you want to be in a world where you reap kindness and you're going to get out of a world where you're getting hammered all the time and where you're getting blown away and you're getting tired and you're getting burned out. This is the way out. Talking about writing a different script in your life. It's called Christotes, Christ-likeness. It's kindness. You want to be Christ-like? You got to be kind. Kindness, gentleness, goodness, those kind of things, those are the things that we keep away from a lot of times. Because I told you already early what that means. They're going to hammer you. They're going to take advantage of you. You're going to lose. You're going to eat it. It's not practical. It doesn't work. You're going to get hammered. That's right. But I got more to say about getting hammered in that capacity because you're not sowing righteousness anymore. And you're not sowing your empire anymore. And what's happening is you are sowing kindness. And when you're sowing kindness, don't kid yourself. God is all over the place. And never underestimate what he's doing. I always do. I go, hey, you just give me this here and all this stuff here going, yeah, I got this thing here. I can't possibly learn anything from it. That's the biggest waste of time I ever saw in my life. And I believe it for 2-3 years. About 10 years later, I look at it and I go, that worthless thing, man, he built a universe on that thing. I don't believe that. It was worthless. How do you do that? I still don't understand it. But I know he did it. You know, like I do something boneheaded, like, I loan somebody too much money and then, you know, they take it and leave it. And then they offer me half of it back and I want all of it back. So then, you know, I don't ask for half of it back. So then they take it all and they leave. And I go, I'm an idiot. I mean, I knew this was going to happen. Why'd I loan them the money in the first place? And why'd they take it all? And well, how come I didn't take half of it back? And what did I learn about this? Like nothing. I knew that before I did it. I knew it before I did it. Why'd I do it? Because I'm an idiot. What did I have to learn out of that? Nothing. I can't learn anything from that. It's worthless. Why did I got to go through that? You'll see. You'll build a universe on it. And it's worthless to me at the time and worthless for years afterward. that I did that, that I'm an idiot. Well, maybe I did it because I was being kind. And afterward I got burned and I didn't like it. You know. And God's busy showing me where I was kind. And he's showing what happened on that. Because I didn't go after the guy. And the guy spent 20 years blasted out over what he did to me. And ran away from the Lord. And then, you know, he's got to get his act together, so he called me up from Hawaii or something. Come on out here. I can't handle it anymore. Can't handle what? Who is this? You know. I'm the guy that took all that money from you. Who's that? I don't remember. I moved on. Stuff like that happens. All right, Psalm 138, verse 2.
I have that one.
Yes.
I will worship toward your holy temple and praise your name for your loving kindness and your truth, for you have magnified your word above all your name.
You get to the holy temple and give thanks for God's chesed ve'emet. He's going to show covenant kindness and truth to his people as he comes down and establishes holy temple, and he pulls off dwelling on earth with his throne in a millennial kingdom forever, or for 1,000 years at least. He's invested in this project. 1,000 generations, 1,000 years. And Genesis 32, verse 11, 10.
I have that one.
And here's Yaakov, you know, he's on the run. Vayetzeh.
I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you have shown your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I have become two groups. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid he will come and attack me, and also the mothers with their children.
Here's Jacob. He just went out on a journey. He came back. He got back to the promised land. He just survived Laban after 20 years, plus the coming and going. And in the tradition, he spent 14 extra years studying in the academy of Shem and Eber, his great-great-great-great-grandfather and his great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. He had maybe two extra greats in there. So, maybe not. Shem is like the 11th generation, and the guy's 22nd, 23rd generation. So Jacob is out there, and he says, I'm too small, and I left with nothing, and you know, you showed chesed ve'emet, and you got me back to this place. And he's a patriarch, you understand? So he went on a journey to go get the matriarch, and then lech lecha yourself with those guys back down here, and you got me down here, and now Esau coming to get me. And I just busted myself with this angel. My name's Israel, and I don't know. I'm living, and I can't run anymore. And I'm dividing the troops up, and he's coming after me with a 400-man raiding party, and it's curtains. And they're getting me after 20 years. This guy's out to get me. And he is. Esau's mad. He stole the birthright. And he says, you showed chesed ve'emet. So chesed ve'emet, these guys get out of impossible situations. And what does God do? He shows chesed ve'emet to the patriarchs, to the matriarchs, to the kings, to the dynasty. He sets it up for 1,000 generations, and he's building the kingdom of God on earth, and he's going to guarantee it through chesed ve'emet. John's out there, we thought grace and truth, Jesus, blah, blah, blah. He's going to give it to you in the Greek, too. I'll look it up next time. It's chesed ve'emet. So, the story is about God. The story is a true story. It involves real people. It's a real journey. Real people have to do real things across generations. They get the same card. Sarah gets the card. Rivka gets the Sarah card. Rahab gets the card. Ruth, you know, she talks about chesed. I couldn't quite find chesed ve'emet, but Ruth 3:10, it's very close. Tamar, she's dealing with something different. Judah gets up and says she's more righteous than I. But Ruth is saying you show chesed in the face of the Redeemer. And that's the important thing. When God is establishing a covenant, if we're walking in plan A and we're fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, and we don't have unnecessary mistakes because we're walking in spirit-filled like Eliezer, we can come and go and do the journey and do it right. Eliezer did the journey right. He never got bogged down. He prayed at the right times. Chesed ve'emet. He's out of there. The guy was a genius. He pulled off the absolute impossible. And Jacob, who's smarter, wilier, and everything else, My Yetzer is coming. He goes through the whole journey. He gets back and he says, you show me yes, I have to get me out of there. Wait for that guy leaving. The guy is murder. He changed my wages 10 times. He went through Egypt all over in Pharaoh's house. 10 plagues to get away from Laban. But if you have a picture here, what we're dealing with then is covenant kindness and truth. They're through grace and truth, but it's not. It's covenant kindness. Chesed be'emet. God establishes the dynasty. It's through covenant kindness and truth that God establishes His own dynasty. It's through Chesed be'emet that God establishes His throne. It's through Chesed be'emet that a household endures in the land across generations to a kingly line, to a dynasty, to Yeshua. So today's portion, what we've learned, is that God is kind to people that keep His covenant. God is kind to people who walk in His ways. God is kind to people who walk in the ways of His instruction. Instruction means Torah. And you can be on God's kind side if you let Him be God and you stick to being kind and you stick to being faithful and obedient and you stick to abiding in the light. And through abiding in the light, you become one who lives in the light. And when you're living in the light, God will show you chesed. And when you're not living in the light, you're going to get killed once in a while, and then He's going to have to show you rachamim. He's going to have to show you mercy. Or you'll get knocked off, and then you'll be, you know, first in line as a martyr. Because He probably won't let you backslide unless you really go out of your way. If you insist on backsliding, that's another matter. Because He will let you be God of your life if you insist on it. And He'll let you follow your own path. He's not taking your free will away. So we live in a moral universe. Rivka was dealt the Sarah card. Eliezer prayed, God show chesed to my Lord Abraham. Test of hospitality came. Story overwhelmed Lavan and Betuel. They tried for delaying and they failed. Rivka says, Elek. She walks the journey, the Sarah card. The blessing of the Akedah, she gets it. Seed will inherit the gates of those who hate them. And it was said by Betuel and Lavan before she left town. And then the journey of faith, she follows in the footsteps of Abraham and Sarah all the way to Sarah's tent, where she marries and continues the household to endure in the land across generations. In the orderly succession of the kingly dynasty, David gets there, his fourth-born Adoniah usurps the kingship, but David by oath, as the Lord lives who's rescued me from everything I've fallen into in my life. I've had plenty of bad news mistakes. I take an oath that Solomon will be. And the portion ends. And later on, it is Solomon. Later on, here's the line through Solomon to Yeshua. The ultimate succession of kingly line. And undergirded every step of the way by Chesed Be'emet, God's covenant kindness and truth to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to whom He swore an oath to give their children's children a kingdom, a nation, a name, a heritage, a dynasty, a destiny to fit into God's story of what He's doing in corporate mankind, what He's doing among the nations as He witnesses His glory to mankind. I'm going to close on Romans 5:4. Somebody read that. You know how the scriptures say, boast of the Lord? I want to change how you read that now. Let me read Romans 5:4. Now what's happened is this. Romans 1 through 5 is all on justification. Romans 6 through 8 is on sanctification. And after that you're into 9 through 15, which is really Hazinu and God's story with Israel. Alright? So again, you got this Sinai model going on where you got to be justified in order to get into camp. You got to be sanctified in order to abide in the camp. And then you got to be glorified in order to live in the camp. And we're going to deal with the idea of being glorified. See, being glorified goes with the territory. To think you're not going to be glorified is an insult, in my opinion, to God. He intends to glorify His servants, whether they like it or not. And when you have let your light shine before men that they might see your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven. In my opinion, it's got nothing to do with works. It's got to do with letting your light shine and other people glorifying God. The works are just window dressing. It's a reason for shining. You know, when you get done with something and you know it pleased God, aren't you beaming? When you really did the journey with God, when you really did the walk, when you really obeyed, when you really did something that was part of His story, like when you gave up your empire and He cashed out and had a good time and you were Eliezer, aren't you just dancing around there like a dancing charismatic Canaanite yourself? And when you're there, aren't you just shining? Let your light shine. And then other people see what you did. And they glorify God too. And you're leading them because you're taking them to God and you're teaching them how to shine in God's presence. That's what Moses tried to do, but we wouldn't go up the mountain. We don't want to listen and we don't want to go. And on top of that, we weren't abiding in sanctification, so we didn't want to go. But if you're abiding in light, then you want to go. And the more you abide the light, the higher you go. And as you ascend, you begin to glow. And when you begin to glow, we're talking about a spiritual dynamic. We're talking about you being filled with light. Now, Romans 5:4, we're talking about glowing here. Read it.
Romans 5:4?
Yep.
Have perseverance, character, and character hope.
Romans?
That was the whole thing.
Yeah, that's
the whole thing.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Is it 4:5?
5:4. You're close. I mean, maybe it continues. Maybe I just... I mean, I take it in the Greek. You know?
Is it the hope of the glory?
Yeah, it goes that far. So I don't know how far it goes.
And it's 2 and...
Yeah, let's see, it's 2 and 3. So it ends in 5:4, yeah. Yeah, it ends in 4, but it starts... All right, we'll start with 5:1.
Therefore, since we have been justified through faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have gained access by faith into this grace in which we now stand, and we rejoice in the hope of the glory of God. Not only so, but we also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
Okay. A few things with the Greek here. All right, first of all, we have, having been justified therefore by faith, we have peace. Now, this isn't something we earn. This isn't something that we work toward. This is something it is. Why? Because when the wrath of God isn't out to get us anymore, we can be at peace. Now, if you're a sinner, or you're doing things wrong, and you feel God's out to get you, or you feel you're imperfect and you feel guilt-tripped, it's like, or you feel you're walking in darkness even, in those situations, you don't feel too peaceful, you see? But the moment of justification, it's like, I've got the blood of Yeshua, that at that moment, it's like, get over it already. Well, I'm still imperfect. Get over it. Yeah, but I'm imperfect. How can I stand in God's presence? You insult the blood of Yeshua if you don't. You don't really believe you're cleansed. That's false piety. Get over it. I've got the life of Yeshua. When God looks at me, He sees Yeshua. Now, since He's seeing Yeshua, what am I going to do? Tell Him, no, you really don't see Yeshua. You see me. This is not your story. Get over it. So we have peace toward God through our Lord, Messiah, Yeshua, through whom also access we have by faith into grace. So by faith, believing God could raise Yeshua from the dead, He can raise us from the dead. So even in a dynamic situation, we can flow with God's grace because we're saved, because we're risen from the dead, because all these sins that we have that killed us lead to our resurrection. Death and resurrection go hand in glove. So justification means I died. Justification means you can't stop it, you're resurrected. You can't stop it. You don't just die and then not get resurrected. In the dynamic, you're resurrected whether you like it or not. Once you're resurrected, you're standing in God's presence, you've got the life of Yeshua on, it's like, whether you like it or not, you're not dead anymore. Say, well, then I'll kill myself again. And then you get risen again. Well, should we sin that grace might abound? No! But we do. It doesn't matter. Grace abounds. Get over it. Move on. You're in God's presence. So by faith, we know we're in God's presence, and by faith, we then know we're powered by grace. Once you're powered by grace, I'm telling you it's your option to work in grace and to play in grace. It's not works, because it's in grace. It's works if you're doing it on day set. It's works if you're building your empire all the time. That's works. But it's grace. It's God's story when you think you're building some kind of empire. And then when you're resting and the empire's crashing, that's God's story too. And your empire just like zeroed out. And this is grace. It keeps you from works. This in which we stand. Now the word kachometha, that's what I'm going to give you. Kachometha. You ready for that one? Kachometha. Yeah. That's we boast. But it's also translated in most of these translations you have, we rejoice. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to can that too. It isn't we rejoice. That's a bad translation. It's we glory. We exalt. This is dynamic. So even though it says boast in the literal, when you get under it, rejoice is closer, but when you get under that, glory is what's going on. Exalt. It's like, I'm standing on a field of grace right now. I'm going out of my mind. I don't know how I got here. It's not your story. I'm going crazy because I'm standing here. That's real. So we exalt in the glory. And once we exalt what? In the hope of the glory of God. Now hope, you know what hope is? Hope is a vision of the future. Faith is the substance of things hoped for. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the assurance of things not seen. Now, the substance of things hoped for, that's God's vision of the future. It's faith in God's story. So hope is the projection of God's story. That's what real hope is. And when we're exulting here in the hope of the glory of God, we're dealing with going crazy over the fact that we're standing in the inheritance. We're powered by God's grace, and we're surrounded by God's grace. We're in a sea of God's grace. And it's like, I'm overwhelmed. I'm going crazy. It's like Eliezer when he walks over there and by God's grace, chesed ve'emet, covenant kindness and truth is the story. He's seen God establish the story of his inheritance. And he couldn't be happier. Crashed empire. That's the reality. No, it's not. Crashed empire is his story. Eliezer's story. But God's story? Eliezer's the hero of faith. Why? Because he's kindly replacing himself with Rivka. And the program's going on. Mm-hmm. And this guy knows when it's time to die. And he's happy about it. There's a spiritual dynamic of death and exaltation in grace with the hope of the glory of God. And he'll be there.
And the continuation.
Exactly. And this guy's got a key slot. Eliezer's in Abraham's tag team. If Abraham's walking around meeting a billion people, and he's going to say hi to 3,000 people a day, to Acts 2 every day for him for 1,000 years, to meet all his grandchildren, and God's saying, did I do you good? Did you meet all these grandchildren? Eliezer is tagging with Abraham. And when they come, you're going to see Eliezer with Abraham, because they're pair. He's in the tag team. This guy is walking around with that. And Eliezer's going to go, wow, I can't believe that Rivka had so many kids around here. And so many grafted in guys. And who knows it better than him? He's a Canaanite. I mean, we're talking glory.
But the same thing with David and Jonathan?
Yeah, all these covenant kindness things. Three, and not only so, but also we glory, kachometha, in the tribulations, knowing that the tribulation makes endurance, it works out endurance, and the endurance, dokimin is proof. The endurance, proof, it's like proof by testing. And proof by testing, hope. And the hope does not make a shame because the love of God is poured out in our hearts. There it is. So when you got bad things happening to you, if you're into your story, you're going to die. Because your soul is going to be eaten alive and you're going to be living in it, watching it happen. And it's going to be a terrifying experience for you to be decreasing, John the Baptist comes along and says, would that I did decrease, that he might increase. So it's glory if you got your face on the right way to look. But if you're into righteousness or into yourself, you're going to get eaten alive and you're going to hate it. Meanwhile, what it's really saying is we glory in tribulation because it produces patience. We glory in patience because it gives us experience, proof by testing. And we glory in proof by testing because it gives us hope of the glory of God. In other words, we glory in watching our empire dissolve because we're getting nearer and nearer to shining bright all the time for God. We glory because we shine. And we let our light shine before men that they might see our good works in Him. Glorify our Father who is in heaven. Now this ought to teach you a few scripts that you'll work on for months and months and months. It's just the beginning. It's Eliezer teaching us how to perpetuate God's story. Questions?
You talk to dwell and abide and live as if they're different terms.
Yeah.
They seem to be synonyms.
Yeah, I'm going to play with that because in what we got coming up in Genesis, Vayeshev is and he dwelt in the land. Okay. And then Vayechi and he lived. That's coming up. And so, and in between I put abide, and I'm saying sanctification is where we abide. Because what I'm going to say with Yeshev is it's like the tent dweller, and he's here and here, and he's tending the land. But it's temporary residence everywhere. And I'm saying you can be doing that with light, where you're in and out. And I'm saying with abiding, it's like you're there a little longer, and you got more of a foothold. And with living, I'm going to say, you can't get out of it. It's you. You've been transformed completely. So I'm saying we're in a process where sometimes we're 1% light-filled, you know, and we're on our way to being 5 and 10, and I'm trying to get to 50 and 100. That's where I'm going with that. So breaking into the light is radical, and everything's built on it. And I'm saying we really know in our spirit when we're in the light and when we're not. And I'm saying when we're not, it's like, get a clue. Wake up immediately and say, I don't care what it means. I'm not going for this darkness. And write a different script. If you feel like it's going to crash your empire, it's like, then glory in tribulation, because you can do that. And you can be right back in the light. And mostly we're fearful at that point, and we don't want to crash our empire, and we're stuck because darkness is there, and the alternative looks worse. And we're in fear. And I'm going, get a clue, start praying, tune into God, open your eyes, ascend, be with Him, put on the blood, enter His presence, dwell there, tell Him you're not going anywhere until it's His story, turn the story over, glory, now walk. So that's what I'm dealing with. New scripts. Any other questions?
Easier said than done.
Of course, but you know. One step at a time. We got our lifetime, you know. We got a lifetime. Shalom, shalom.
Shalom. Thank you. 3:10 is grace, but could 3:11 be the truth?
No, my daughter, do not fear. Ruth 3:11. I will do for you all that you request, for all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman.
No.
All the people in town know you're a virtuous woman.
That's true.
Well, there's a witness there.
Yeah, there's a witness.
There's a witness there.
That's
true. Now it is true that I am your near kinsman redeemer, your new redeemer. And he says, you know, there's another guy, and if he doesn't go for it, I'll go for it. And then it becomes true. It becomes true because Ruth marries him to life. Shalom.